Welcome to the Project Sleep Podcast. For those of you who've listened before, you might be expecting to hear from Julie Flygar, Project Sleep's founder and CEO. But for this special series of podcasts on sleep apnea topics, I'll be your host. I'm Emma Cooksey, the Sleep Apnea Program Manager here at Project Sleep, and I'm so glad you're here. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. We created the Sleep Apnea Squad series to allow listeners to dive deeper into specific topics relevant to living with sleep apnea. For more on today's topic, please check out our corresponding toolkit, which is available for free on our website to download, print, and share. The link to the toolkit and other Sleep Apnea Squad topics is in the show notes, or you can find the Sleep Apnea Squad page at project-sleep.com. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to consult your own medical team while making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a rating or a review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. So without further ado, here's today's Sleep Apnea Squad episode. So welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be talking about mouth taping and sleep apnea as part of our Sleep Apnea Squad program. So on to our special guest today. Ronnie Fuchs is a native New Yorker who has lived her entire life in Brooklyn, New York. She's married and has two children, Emma, who is 28, and works as an admissions coordinator at a private preschool in Tribeca, and Eric, who is 31 and works as a company manager on Broadway. Ronnie and her husband are retired and enjoy the freedom of doing what they want when they want. So I'm going to leave the rest of what Ronnie had here because she's going to tell her story in her own words in a second. So on to Caitlin. So Caitlin Shrum holds a certificate of clinical competence from the American Speech Language and Hearing Association, is a certified myofunctional therapist, a qualified orofacial myologist, and a certified Buteyko breathing method instructor. And if you're not sure what all of those things mean, she's going to explain what those things mean in a minute. Caitlin's also the author of Frankie Goes to Camp, a children's book on breathwork techniques, and she's been published in several professional journals for her research on pediatric sleep disorder breathing, among other topics. Additionally, Caitlin is a board member of the Oral Motor Institute and provides mentorship and continuing education to other speech and language pathologists, occupational therapists, and registered dental hygienists. Welcome, Caitlin. Dr. Upneet Shavla, MD, is a double board certified physician in internal medicine and sleep medicine. She serves as an assistant professor at Rush University Medical Center, with roles in both departments of internal medicine and sleep medicine. Dr. Shavla completed her residency in internal medicine at Mercy St. Vincent Medical Center in Ohio, and her fellowship in sleep medicine at Rush University Medical Center. Beyond her clinical and academic roles, Dr. Shavla aims to simplify the complexities of sleep medicine for the general public. Through her presence on social media platforms like Instagram and TikTok, she's Sleeping Beauty MD. She provides valuable insights, tips, and behind the scenes look at into the life of a sleep medicine expert. So welcome, Dr. Shavla. It's so nice to see you. Okay, so let's just really quickly give an overview of what we're talking about today. We're actually not going to go in this order because I wanted to start with Ronnie's story. But we're going to talk a bit about mouth taping. It seems to be such a craze across all of social media right now. We wanted to kind of talk about where that came from in the beginning. And the reason we have a whole hour to talk about this is that it's not a really simple topic. So I think sometimes it would be really easy to say it's never okay to tape your mouth or everyone should do it, but really the truth is a lot more nuanced than that. So we have a little bit of time to dig into it. Also, we're going to talk specifically about people with obstructive sleep apnea and, you know, ask whether mouth taping is safe for people with obstructive sleep apnea and what kind of questions you might want to ask before you start taping your mouth. And so the last point here is what we're actually going to start with. So we're going to talk a little bit about mouth taping with CPAP, because I know Ronnie has an experience with that that might be helpful to people listening. So without further ado, I'm going to hand off to Ronnie to share with us a bit about her journey. So do you want to just start with a little bit about your journey to diagnosis, maybe, and what kind of symptoms you had, how you got that diagnosis, and then a little bit about, you know, how you even came across this idea of mouth taping?
Sure. So I've been using a CPAP now since March, but I probably should have been using one 4, 5, 10, 15 years ago. I'm a snorer, so I've been told. My daughter has told me that she would not share a room with me in a hotel anymore because of that. My dentist, who is someone that does a lot of sleep apnea work in a local hospital, had been suggesting that I get a sleep study. And I was like, yeah, sure. Okay, right. I'll do that. And then I happened to go to an ENT for related to my ear. And I passed with flying colors. And just in the course of conversation, I can't even remember how it came up. She started to ask me questions. She asked me if I snored, if I woke myself up when I snored, if I had headaches, if I had dry mouth, if I had any kind of anxiety. I answered yes, all of the above, and suggested, this was back last August, and suggested that I consider doing a sleep study. So I procrastinated and I finally did it in January of this year. And I probably got the results about 4 weeks after I did the study. And I, as I was saying before we came on, I was shocked because it came back as severe. So then I waited for, you know, to get to start the get picking up my machine and getting a mask. And like many people, I struggled to find the right mask and discovered at that time, you know, snoring, mouth breathing. The best mask for me would have been either a hybrid or a full mask. And I have a hybrid, but I really don't like the feeling of having my mouth fully covered. And like everything else in this world now, you know, you can find help on social media. And there are a couple of Facebook groups about for sleep apnea. And I was on one where they were talking about mouth tape. And I tried a couple, you know, I was doing this, you know, like the strips on my nose to see if that opened my nose up more. I forget why I decided I'm just going to take a risk and get mouth tape. And I started with one and I was using it and I was finding that I still felt like I needed it. I switched to a different one that had an opening and it felt less confining. And then I don't know, I guess now it's probably about 8 weeks ago, I thought I'm going to try not using mouth tape. And I obviously trained myself just to be a nose breather and not a mouth breather. Although I find at times now I still have to use the tape, but not regularly. But I know it was very controversial. There are a couple of people on the pages that are like, no, don't do it, don't do it. But it allows me to, I use nasal pillows and I'm so much more comfortable with that. I will, you know, again, if necessary, like if I'm a little, if I feel like I'm just too tired to pay attention to nose breathing when I fall asleep, I'll use the mouth tape. But I was using it I think I was using it every night, probably for about 3 months. And now I just use it when I need to.
That's great. So I think one of the things that people don't realize is that mouth tape for some people, with CPAP users who are using a nasal mask, it's really important to keep your mouth closed because your mouth falling open can really mess up the pressure, right? If the air is going into your nose and out of your mouth, that's not ideal. So always, like historically, people would be offered a chin strap that would keep their chin, like, you know, lifted up and their mouth closed. And so I think in the sort of CPAP user community, especially on Facebook groups like you were talking about, mouth tape, I think, has been talked about as an alternative to if you don't want to use the full chin strap kind of thing.
So what I want to say about the chin strap is I can't use it. I have a recessed jaw So the only thing that works for me if I want to use a chin strap is I use like an old-fashioned headband. But even that, you know, still slips up. So because I have a recessed jawline, it was sort of like I had no other option. Like I know people, you know, everyone say, oh, I tried three or four different chin straps. And I'm like, I am giving Amazon and you know, PapMD and all of those other companies a lot of money and they're going in the garbage. So let me try this controversial thing and see what happens.
Yeah. So I guess we wanted to go all the way back to the beginning. And maybe, Caitlin, if you could just kind of start with this idea. I think a lot of people tuning in might be thinking that there's really no difference between, you know, nasal breathing and mouth breathing. So I think like there's this kind of thought that the air is kind of getting to the same place. So why would it matter if you're breathing through your nose or your mouth? But actually, they're quite different. So I'm hoping you can start us off by kind of explaining that difference. And then also maybe talk to us a little bit about what myofunctional therapy is.
Nasal breathing and mouth breathing, very different. They will eventually get you the same end result as that you're getting oxygen. However, nasal breathing is the way our body was meant to breathe. So this is a backup. This is not how we're supposed to breathe. There are certain instances which we can chat about when you mouth breathing is okay. But for the most part, you want to be nasally breathing because it's an air filter. So first of all, imagine the difference between, like, think about what comes out of your nose when you blow it. And then imagine that not getting filtered as it goes through your mouth. That's like how I like to describe it, especially to my younger clients, because then they're like, oh, that's disgusting. So your nose is a natural filter. It's warming the air. So it's not cold air going down and hitting your lungs. It humidifies it. And then also it improves our uptake of oxygen. And that's really, to me, that's one of the biggest ones. It's mouth breathing is less efficient. So when we're mouth breathing, you're typically taking shallower breaths more frequently. And it tends to be more upper chest as opposed to those fuller diaphragmatic breaths. And when you have this rapid, shallow pattern, it expels too much CO2. And so we're going to have a quick crash course in chemistry. And please stay with me. We always think of CO2 as a waste gas, but it's not. CO2 is actually helping drive your respiration and is helping you absorb oxygen. If you are breathing rapidly, you're expelling too much CO2. And the effect that has on your blood pH is that it makes you too alkaline. So our bodies are pretty exact where we need to be for our pH levels. We want to make sure that we're not going into anything. We want to stay 7.35 to 7.45. That's our comfort zone. When we're expelling that oxygen, when we expel that CO2 too rapidly, what happens is the oxygen binds to hemoglobin and it doesn't get released to our blood vessels. So you're not absorbing it. You're not using it efficiently. So that's kind of like the long story short of it, without going too deep down a rabbit hole into blood pH.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
Yeah. And the other thing too, and this is important to remember, is that when you're taking deeper diaphragmatic breaths, the lower lobes of your lungs are much better at absorbing oxygen because those little tiny, if you look at a picture, they're going to look like little tiny bubbles or like little leaves on a tree. Those are alveoli. You're much denser in your lower lobes than you are in your upper lobes. So if you can bring that oxygen to the lower lobes, it's going to be absorbed better. So that's kind of the quick and dirty version of why we want to nasal breathe.
I love that. And so where this whole mouth taping thing began is even as a concept. So maybe you can just explain to us a little bit about, so I think that really like this, it's not maybe the first time anyone had taped their mouth, but I think when it really hit the, you know, our culture as a phenomenon was really when James Nestor had his book Breath, which was a bestseller. And so I've interviewed James Nestor from my podcast, Sleep Apnea Stories, and I know that Caitlin's been all on retreats with him and everything. So James Nestor did a sort of experiment, but even he would say it's not like, you know, research standard experiment, but himself and another friend blocked their noses. So they're both perfectly healthy with no snoring and sleep apnea events. And they blocked their noses and did, I think, 15 days or something. And they charted, like, they did exercise, they slept like that, they did all of this. And they showed over that time that they had given themselves snoring and some apnea events. Now, again, they didn't have full polysomnograms and it wasn't like a full research study, but it was just interesting enough for him to really delve into this idea of nasal breathing versus mouth breathing. And so when James Nestor talked about mouth taping, he's talking about a tiny postage stamp size piece of 3M micropore tape that he would just put like on his lips to kind of encourage his lips to stay closed, but he could like open his mouth like easily and it would move. But I think that we've kind of like with mouth taping moved to this whole, like you can buy mouth tape that like there's no vents in it and it looks like, you know, this huge amount of tape. So Caitlin, do you want to just kind of like talk a little bit about like, was that just about accurate that that's where this mouth taping idea came from?
Yeah, I tend to think it like started with breath. And I have to say, I love that book for certain reasons. I think it was a really great way for people not in the field to get exposed to the importance of nasal breathing and the overall health impact it has on our daily lives. I think it's great for that. And I recommend it to a lot of my clients for homework. I think that there is nuance that, you know, obviously he can't go into everything. And with breathing in the human body, we're all different and there is nuance. But yes, I would say that that kind of like introduced it to the mainstream. And then social media, just as it does, grabbed onto it and took off running. And now we have like, I mean, there's so many different things. There's the mouth tape. There's the Kardashians now have like a full on like face firming like chin strap that you can wear to keep your mouth closed. So it's a lot. And I do have to say, when I went on James Nestor's retreat, they did hand out mouth tape. It was just like a thin, our goodie bags had mouth tape. And myself and the other SLPs who are also specializing in Maya, we kind of all were like, oh, there's probably a good amount of people here who shouldn't be just blindly taping their mouth shut.
So you just mentioned, so being a speech and language pathologist and a myofunctional therapist, I think a lot of people tuning in won't really know what a myofunctional therapist does. Can you maybe explain to us a little bit about what that part of your job is about and just generally like a bit more about, like, it's not just about taping your mouth, right? Talk maybe a little bit more about like the ideal, like how people should be in resting posture and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So the way I like to explain myofunctional therapy, it's kind of like physical therapy that just focuses on strengthening the airway and the musculature of the face and the neck and the throat, the oral pharynx. That's the best way to do it because we do neuromuscular rehabilitation. So best way to describe that is we're doing new muscle memory so that you are resting your tongue in the correct posture. And so for people who aren't aware of where your tongue is supposed to be living, it should be right up, slightly suctioned to your palate or the roof of your mouth. Shouldn't be pushing on teeth. We want it just lightly up there. That keeps it up out of your airway. It also provides the scaffolding for correct facial development, which I think we're going to go into later. We want it to live up there. We want our lips to be closed without any strain at rest. We want to be nasally breathing and we want to have the correct swallow pattern. So the correct swallow pattern, again, not something that anyone ever teaches you when you're growing up, but the correct swallow pattern is that your tongue tip is going to push up onto that kind of bony ridge right behind your teeth. And it's going to move backwards in a wave-like motion for you to correctly swallow. And again, no one tells you this. It's supposed to happen like that, but for so many of us, that's not the progression of how we develop because there are environmental factors and genetic factors that get in the way. But the goal of myofunctional therapy, again, we're going to have nasal breathing, correct tongue posture, correct lip posture, and the correct swallow. So that's what we focus on. And the way I kind of got into that is I specialized in feeding before I got into myofunctional therapy. And then I had randomly heard about myofunctional therapy through a different therapist. And I was like, okay, that sounds interesting. And then when you actually learn more about it, you're like, okay, so this is all airway based, which makes so much sense if you were working with feeding and speech and all the structures that are overlaid over your airway.
So the next thing I wanted to get into, Dr. Chavla, I wondered if you could just speak a little bit about this idea of, it seems like, especially on social media, you have a lot of, you know, sleep hacks or snoring hacks. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have people going to a doctor like you who specializes in sleep. And so I kind of just wondered if you could share with us a little bit about what people you think need to know, like before they start just randomly taping their mouth, like what are the sort of signs and symptoms that warrant actually going to see a medical professional for screening first before they do that?
Yes, totally. And first and foremost, thank you so much for having me, because I do think this is like a very important topic for everyone. We all need sleep, right? So I think that when we talk about sleep issues, the main thing that comes up is sleep apnea, which, yes, it is a very commonly underdiagnosed problem. So when people think of sleep apnea, they start thinking, okay, well, I don't wake up, you know, choking or coughing at night. I don't snore. Yes, most people who have sleep apnea do have those symptoms, but just because you don't have those symptoms doesn't mean you don't have sleep apnea. And just to kind of rewind just a little, we should probably explain what sleep apnea is.
Yeah.
So for anyone who doesn't know what sleep apnea is, it is a condition of your upper airway where it closes at night, you know, causing pauses of breathing during your sleep, which prevent you from falling into that deep, restful sleep. And so oftentimes people who have sleep apnea will also feel very sleepy throughout the day, can't get through the day without a nap. But in my opinion, I think if you have any issue with sleep, if you're waking up a lot at night, if you're having trouble getting up in the morning, if you're including snoring and waking up, you know, choking or gasping for air, I think any little issue with sleep, get a sleep study done. Because the risks of untreated sleep apnea far outweigh, you know, the inconvenience of getting a sleep study done. And these days they have home sleep studies, so it's not even that inconvenient anymore. So to answer your question about who should go see, you know, a sleep doctor, I would say if you have any issue with sleep whatsoever, just get it checked out. You know, the worst that can happen is you go, you get a sleep study done and they say you're good, you know, but treating it, just like Ronnie had, you know, mentioned before, she didn't even realize how severe it was and, you know, has seen an improvement. So I would say any issue in sleep, get it checked out.
Yeah, that's great. I also wonder about, is there a particular reason like somebody should go to an ear, nose, and throat doctor versus a sleep specialist? Like, you know, maybe people, I'm just thinking of people who maybe they don't necessarily notice a lot of issues with their sleep or daytime sleepiness or anything, but they do notice that they have trouble breathing effortlessly through their nose. So I'm kind of thinking those people, maybe an ear, nose, and throat.
Yeah, like, you know, great question. There's a lot of overlap between ear, nose, throat, and sleep, right? Because that's how we're breathing through our nose and throat. generally, ear, nose, throat, they're surgeons. So a lot of times the solution will be some sort of surgery. So if you have more of like a daytime kind of breathing problem, I would agree with you that probably the best thing to do is see an ear, nose, and throat doctor where they can kind of take a little camera and look into your airways. And oftentimes they will also ask sleep questions because having those kind of daytime problems can often also occur at night without you realizing. So I agree with you if you're having some sort of daytime breathing. Maybe ENT is the first way to go. And I'm sure they will do a thorough evaluation and send you to sleep if they think that's also necessary.
So that's kind of how you went about it, right, Ronnie? Like, I feel like you said it was an ear, nose, and throat.
Yeah. Doctor. So when I was having the conversation with my dentist, my plan was to go to a pulmonologist. And it was sort of just serendipitous that I was sitting in the ENT's office having, you know, a hearing test and some other stuff when the conversation happened. So I did do a home sleep study, which is what made me more likely to go ahead and do it, because the idea that I could do it in my home, in my bed, not having, you know, a nurse come in and out during the course of the night, much more, for lack of a better word, attractive to me. And that's why I did it at home. And I know that, you know, a lot of people said you don't get as, you know, how much more severe could my severe apnea be if I had done it in a lab? It wasn't going to come out mild. So I was glad that I did it that way.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we might want to just, Dr. Chavla, do you want to just explain that to people a little bit more? That I think sometimes people think that the only way to test for sleep apnea is to go to a like in-person lab and sleep, you know, like I think oftentimes that's not the case now.
Yeah, yes. These days they have a home sleep test where the equipment can vary. Ronnie, I'm not sure what kind you had, but it can be as simple as just a watch that you wear to bed, a one night thing that can collect data. I will say that there are oftentimes it can underestimate the severity, but like you mentioned, you know, severe sleep apnea is severe sleep apnea and you're going to treat it the same. The only issue is when it comes back negative, but we are still suspicious that there is sleep apnea. And at that time, you know, if we decide we need to do an in-lab sleep study, then sure, we can. But yeah, it is important for people to know that you can do it in the comfort of your own home, in your own, you know, jammies. And it's and the equipment isn't even that bad either, where it's just like, you know, I mean, people are already wearing this, right? Like Apple Watches to check their sleep and Aura rings, whatnot. So it's just like that.
I didn't know about the watch one. A friend of mine just recently did that. But I had to wear something across my chest.
Okay, yeah.
And then I had the cannula and the oximeter. But it was, I don't think I slept any worse with all of that. So, but you're right, because I mean, I wear an Apple Watch to bed to track my sleep. So right. It wouldn't be that different.
Yeah, and just a word about in-lab sleep studies. When they're necessary, they're really helpful because they can pinpoint, like I've had a couple and throughout my long journey with sleep apnea. And I know that, you know, there's a certain things that it'll point out which you don't get from a home test that can be really helpful, like especially titrating pressure. Yeah. Exactly, perfectly. Or, you know, I had a test where it was showing some periodic limb movement.
Yes.
And we wouldn't have known that just from a home test. So sometimes if you really need those answers, it can be so helpful. So I'm actually kind of a big fan.
Yeah, I do agree with you that I don't think we should do away with them. They collect a lot more data. That's probably why it's a lot more uncomfortable, because you have wires kind of all over you. But the home sleep studies are really more meant for really just the breathing. Whereas like you were saying, Emma, the in-lab ones can pick up other things too, like limb movements. Sometimes people have other parasomnias, you know, that we can pick up as well.
Yeah.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
So one of the things I did want to ask, and this is maybe like, I don't know, Dr. Chavla and maybe Caitlin too, is just about, I don't really think we have conclusive research about sleep apnea and mouse taping and whether it's good or bad or like, you know, is there anything particular you want to speak to about that? I don't know that we've had any really big studies about that.
Yeah, I can go first. I think that you're right. There's not a lot of robust data, at least that I have seen. There have been some studies. I think it's kind of started coming out, being published in like 2022, I want to say. I don't know if anyone has seen something earlier than that. The only one study that I can think of was kind of a positive for sleep apnea. It really only tested mild sleep apnea patients, and they also excluded patients who had kind of different facial structures, like someone who has like severe, like like a recessed chin. So it was really looking at a population that was, for lack of better terms, maybe like easy to treat, and they tested them with the mouth tape only. They had mild sleep apnea, mouth tape only. They were also a BMI of under 30, I believe, which, you know, also can affect sleep apnea. And those individuals, their AHI actually did improve. And, you know, it makes sense because, and I'm sure Caitlin can comment, because, I mean, I'm sure mouth tape does help, you know, when you start breathing again out of your nose. I'm sure it can help the anatomy and the physiology of your breathing at night. But this is not to say that it's very important to just get tested for it first. For someone who has severe sleep apnea, you know, like Ronnie, who was mouth breathing, that kind of serves as like how Caitlin said, a backup, right? Our mouth opens up because our airway is obstructing. So yeah. If you have severe sleep apnea and your mouth, you need to mouth breathe to allow for that air exchange, putting on mouth tape could be, you know, very dangerous. So all that being said, I would say no, not a lot of robust data, maybe one or two studies out there that show some positive data, but it's really only for like mild cases. And again, like easy to treat sleep apnea.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't seen a lot of, like you said, robust data on it. It's very, sleep patients are so heterogeneous and there's so many factors that you have to look at that I don't like to make a blanket statement like, oh, if you are, you know, under a certain BMI or you're only mild, like this would be great. Our anatomy is all different. So I'm very cautious. And I don't think that I've ever said to a client, I've never been like, yeah, you should mouth tape. I've been, you know,
You've never suggested that to one of your clients.
If I did, it was maybe like a long time ago. Cause obviously like you grow as a clinician. And if I could look at myself 2 years ago, 5 years ago, I'm a different clinician because obviously your knowledge grows.
Right. Back in the day, you hadn't treated me. So
yeah. So I have kind of like a formula that if somebody's really adamant about trying it, I'll say, okay, let's try it during the day first while you're upright. Let's see, can you nasally breathe consistently across the day while you're doing daytime activities? Okay, that's going well. How are you if you recline in a chair? How are you if you lay down and you're, you know, even just watching TV like in that position? Because as we all know, gravity is a huge factor in pushing down our anatomy and can cause that collapse. And then, yeah, work your way up to trying to do like a nap with tape. That's fine. But I don't know, to me, and as a myofunctional specialist, I think it can be putting a Band-Aid, a literal Band-Aid, on a bigger problem. And that being said, I know not everyone can afford or has access to myofunctional therapy, and it can be a great tool. I just want to make sure that you know you can nasally breathe and that there's not something structurally in the way that's going to cause you to have less oxygen because you are now taping your backup system.
Yeah. And as far as the way that, like, I've heard from certain people living with sleep apnea that they've been told by doctors, don't use mouth tape. Like, you know, it's not a good idea. And we would always like defer to whatever medical advice people have been given. But I think as somebody who tried mouth taping and has no business mouth taping, what happened with me was I was in my, like, you know, I'm going to just make this nose work. So I haven't been able to breathe through my nose since childhood. and had all sorts of things going on. So I had a pretty serious tongue tie, which kept my tongue low and forward in my mouth, and the opposite of what Caitlin just described is where your tongue needs to live. So she was explaining that the tongue needs to be in the roof of your mouth, and mine never hung out there. Like, I don't know how much we want to get into it, but basically for me, you know, talking, my daughter actually just got braces today, and I had a really good discussion with the orthodontist because my the roof of my mouth is really, really narrow because it never had that tongue almost like acting as scaffolding to make it, you know, wider. So that obviously, Caitlin, do you want to explain about the roof of your mouth is the floor of your nose for people?
Sure. Okay.
About that whole process. I'm not doing a great job of explaining what happened with my face.
No, you're doing a great job. Okay. So craniofacial development. I want people to start thinking of basically, I want you to think of your from the neck up, that's your airway. I want you to stop thinking like, this is my face, this is my teeth, this is my head. This is all part of your airway. And what we don't realize, again, because no one's like, hey, by the way, your tongue's supposed to be up, that is helping drive facial growth, which is essentially airway growth. So when your tongue is resting up in your palate, it is not just your palate, it's the roof of your mouth, but also the floor of your nose. So if your tongue is not up in your palate, exerting the upward and lateral pressure, what can happen is your palate is going to start moving upwards, and it gets kind of that high or narrow V-shaped palate. And what that what happens then is all of a sudden your palate is now taking up your nasal airspace. So that can actually, in some cases, it can even deviate your septum because it's pushing so far up into your airway. So we want that tongue to be up there so that it's moving our face forward and driving our airway growth, because otherwise, again, you're going to have less nasal airway space. It's going to make it harder to nasally breathe. And then you get stuck in this horrible vicious cycle where you can't nasal breathe. So then your mouth breathing. So then your tongue drops low and the palate's just going to keep getting more narrow and higher. So you want, think of your tongue, and I can't take credit for coming up with this concept at all. I believe it was Linda D'Onofrio, who's also a speech language pathologist, but she said your tongue is your body's natural palate expander and your lips are the braces. And, you know, obviously, again, there's genetic factors and environmental factors, but if we can, from a young age or from birth, ideally, even before birth in utero, have our tongue resting in the right spot and our lips closed, it's going to promote healthy airway development.
Great explanation.
Thank you.
So I do feel like I just kind of wanted to give an overview for people because I feel like this whole airway area is like there's so much to it, but I think it's good to have some sort of overview for people, you know, of like why all this stuff is. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to ask real quick, if you wouldn't mind sharing, Caitlin, do you want to share a little bit about your nasal surgery? Because that can also be part of this discussion, right? If your nose is not working well, and that's the reason that you're, you know, not able to nasal breathe well, sticking mouth tape on is not going to solve that. Do you want to maybe talk to us a little bit about the surgery that you had?
Sure. So, case in point, I did not have correct tongue resting posture, oral resting posture. I have a very high, narrow palate, and I have since childhood. And that was among one of the problems. So I had a deviated septum. I also had sinus polyps, and then I also had bone spurs. So I had a whole lot of things going on. If you saw my nose prior to surgery, I had what's called a dorsal hump. So it was kind of, you know, that midsection of my nose was kind of larger and would cause the tip to kind of drop down. I got to the point where I just was not able to fully nasal breathe. It got so bad with the polyps and my turbinates were also very enlarged. It got to the point where it was just very hard. It was a struggle to breathe. So I ended up going and having septoplasty, rhinoplasty, turbinate reduction, and then they found the bone spurs when they were in there. And if anyone wants to go see the picture of all the things they removed from my nose, you can go on my Instagram. It's Southern Speech and Mayo. And if you scroll way down, there is a whole
really gnarly.
It is gnarly. And my doctor probably thought I was crazy because I was like, can you take a picture of that and send it to me? But yeah, so that the first surgery, it worked well for a time. And I ended up actually having a second one because I got COVID, my turbinates hypertrophied again. So they got bigger and I was like mouth breathing like crazy again. And I ended up having to have my septum straightened a little bit more and the turbinates reduced again. But it's made a world of difference. So now I have upper airway resistance syndrome. So I still have a sleep disorder, but now I know I can breathe through my nose. So I wear at night a mandibular advancement device and I actually tape because I know I can breathe through my nose. I know it's clear now. I have a lot of data to proving that it's clear and, you know, obviously my own subjective opinion, but I wouldn't have gotten to that point had I not had the surgery. So if you are concerned about having surgery, I'll say I was ready to be in a lot of pain. I was ready to be bruised. I had none of that. It was uncomfortable, but I was up and ready to go within a couple of days.
So yeah, I think the difference there is just this whole, I just hear a lot of people in comments on social media and I'm where they just decide to do it without seeing a doctor to begin with. And I think the difference between with you and Ronnie's experience, you got your diagnosis, you got your treatment. So for Ronnie, that was the nasal CPAP. For you, that's a mandibular advancement device. And then you were taping your mouth, which is kind of different from people who haven't even seen a doctor in the beginning, you know? So I guess that's one of the things we want to get across to people watching. And so we did have some questions.
I started to use the tape. And then when I had my appointment, you have to go in within the first 90 days when you start CPAP. I did talk to my doctor about it. But I also saw those videos where, people, the advertisements that people are just, have no sleep apnea issues, but, use the tape for whatever reason they're saying they're using it. I think the example before, I think, Caitlin, when you say the whole Kardashian thing, that was really, I'm doing it for medical reasons. You're doing it for vanity. So there's a big difference there.
And I think there's a big difference in how responsible people are in posting about mouth taping, right? So there's certain, Project Sleep doesn't recommend a particular brand or any companies or anything like that. But I just know from my own experience on social media that there's certain companies where they're promising the work, they're basically saying, use our mouth tape and you'll be sleeping so well and all of these things and promising certain results that I'm just not sure you can really do that. And then there's other people who, especially the ones to me that are kind of better ones that don't form a complete seal, so if you do need to get air, there's a gap or or myotape where there's a hole, just so that you're not kind of suffocating, really. So there was a question, let's see. And Nicole asked, what are some noticeable signs of the palate push developing high and pushing upwards you were discussing, Caitlin?
You can see it. Up in the top, I have kind of a bony spur.
Yeah.
That's called a tori. But your palate should be relatively U-shaped and not high up. It should be pretty flat.
I have a crossbite, right? So that kind of shows it that the top is so much narrower.
Yeah. So you want, when you smile, another indicator that you might be narrow, when you smile, your teeth should go all the way and fill up your mouth. You shouldn't have these dark corridors on the sides. Yeah. And you can also tell a lot of times what happens is if we're not spreading laterally, we get a longer face. You can tell I have a much longer face than it is wide because what happens is the mandible is rotating down and backwards instead of getting that forward facial and drive that it needs. So those are some of the signs, but if you're worried about it in a kid or an adult, honestly, just go and look. And you can tell pretty easily if it's high, it's probably noticeably high. I don't tend to find like a lot of gray area where there's, you're like, is it high? It's usually high or it's okay.
So we have an interesting question in the chat from Caitlin, who asks, I was told by my sleep, and of course, we're not giving any medical advice of any kind. She says, I was told by my sleep doctor that I have very mild positional sleep apnea, and it may develop to be more severe later in life. Can anything be done as prevention to mitigate the apnea getting worse? Do you want to think about an answer to that, Dr. Chappell?
Yeah. So again, it's like very different for everyone because it also has a lot to do with anatomy, your physiology, like, are you breathing out of your mouth, your nose? So I don't think there is anything that I can just say in general, you know, that this could help. All I can say is that as we age, it does change and it can oftentimes, yes, get worse. And then, you know, weight gain can also make it worse. So if that is something that you start to notice, like that's something that could help if you worked on weight loss. But this is me just kind of, you know, thinking of what, like anything that could help, because really it is so different per patient.
I would say, I mean, just as somebody who probably went undiagnosed for about 10 years, and then I've been on CPAP now for about 18. And I would say, I mean, this again is just talking me as an individual, and it doesn't necessarily apply to Caitlin in the comments, but certainly I've seen mine progress to more severe, especially in middle age as I gained weight. And so I think that's quite common for a lot of people. So that's just, you know, my take on it. Oh gosh, Nicole's question, Caitlin, is what are your thoughts on palate expanders and to start at which stage? I don't know if I want to get into palate expanders.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not a dentist. I'm not an orthodontist. So technically this is not, it's not my scope of practice to say which one's better than the other. My feelings on expansion are in a lot of cases, not all cases. Again, we're talking about there's a lot of heterogeneity among sleep patients. I think it can be great. I do. And I refer out, I work with a team on, you know, expansion, and I work with ENTs and ortho and everything. So I think it can be great. That is not going to fix every single sleep patient. You can expand, you can have, you know, a wider airway, a bigger airway. That doesn't mean you're not going to get some collapse still. So I think when you do look into expansion, we need to see what other factors there are. It really needs to be a team decision of what the best way is to move forward. And as far as expansion goes, the earlier the better, because once we get to a certain age, and it's, you know, before even like the teen years, we start to kind of not, I hate to use the word solidify, but things start to stay where they're going to stay and they start living where they're going to live. If you can get in while that craniofacial development is still happening at a more rapid pace, you're going to get faster and better results. So I've had children as young as 3 go for expansion, and there are a lot of people who don't believe in doing it. They'll say, oh, that they don't need to do it that young. If it's an airway concern, then I am fully, you know, I'm supportive of the orthodontist decision to do that, because if we can get them in young and prevent them from having all these other issues down the line, we're growing their airway. I don't even think about orthodontics anymore in terms of straight teeth. It's airway development and brain development for me. So
it's really important for people to find specialists.
Yes.
Orthodontist with a lot of experience in that area.
Yes. And, you know, I've gone through expansion in my preteens and then again as an adult. Just because they expand you doesn't mean they expand you for your airway, because, you know, orthodontics has changed. You need to find an airway centric dentist or orthodontist and a team to work with. It can't just be like, hey, I'm going to go to whoever down the street and hope that they expand me enough.
Got it. Well, listen, We are at wrapping up time. Thank you all so much for being part of this discussion. I really, really appreciate each of your perspectives. It was really great. And I'm going to just do some little, did anybody have any final like comments or anything? No?
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. I would just say, don't believe everything you hear on social media.
Right.
Ask a professional.
Yeah.
And I guess that I would also say, you know, I think that you were saying it before, you know, if you suspect that there might be a problem, then check it out. Because I mean, a couple of people in my life since I was diagnosed, actually my cousin, I don't know if he thought it was going to be genetic or something, like ran to his doctor and asked for a sleep study. And he was a little disappointed that he came back with no sleep apnea. I was like, what? I'm like,
more people were like that.
And then was over at our house for a couple of weeks ago for the Jewish New Year. And he was like, let me see your equipment. I'm like, dude, you want it? I'll get it. But I would really encourage people, if they have the least bit suspicion, to just, particularly because you can do it at home when, you know, pick the night you want to do it, and better, no pun intended, either finding out that you have it or that you don't.
Thank you, everyone. So I put together a little, so again, we were mentioning at the beginning, we're going to be making a toolkit from today's discussion. And so we'll have more resources than this on the toolkit. But I just wanted to kind of point to, like, this was the book that I was mentioning earlier, Breath by James Nestor. And like I think we mentioned, again, he's not a doctor. It's just an interesting read that makes you start thinking about this nasal breathing versus mouth breathing thing. We didn't even really get on to buteyko breathing and all of that stuff that Caitlin knows all about. There's a book called The Oxygen Advantage by Patrick McEwen. And I think that that's another really interesting read. And again, he's a breathwork instructor. He's not a doctor, but I think it's interesting if you're getting into learning about nasal breathing. So I kind of put those there. And then there's also, these are a couple of podcast episodes I recorded where I interviewed James Nestor and Patrick McEwen. There's a really good Substack by two doctors, Chris Govia and Robson Capasso. So if you haven't found that, they have a really good article they did on mouth taping where they looked at the available evidence and they just talked a little bit about it. So I think that's really interesting if anybody's interested. And we usually just have these top four of the different patient organizations and patient advocacy groups here in the US. So I added the Airway Revolution and the Children's Airway First Foundation. They're both kind of like in this area of like airway. So the top four are more dealing with actual sleep disorders and people with sleep apnea. But I think that they have some really good resources, especially for younger children. And they're good to check out. I have to mention this at every moment. So we have an awareness campaign called Sleep Apnea, Let's Face It. So we're continuing to feature people who care about raising awareness around sleep apnea. So you can get involved yourself by going to Project Sleep's website, and all the information is there, or follow us on social media. It's project_sleep there. And we love it when people share, especially pictures with the sign, and you can use the hashtag to be part of the campaign. And just to mention, we have a free national sleep helpline. So this is for anyone to call. You don't have to have a diagnosis. You just might have some questions about your sleep. And our goal is to really support anyone with sleep issues and connect them with really good resources in their area. Oh, there's a Rising Voices thing in here too. So Rising Voices is a speaker training program, which I'll be encouraging Ronnie to do next year. So this was kind of how I got involved with Project Sleep. And every year during the summer, we train people living with sleep disorders to become patient advocates and share their stories. So it's a really great program. You can find out more on Project Sleep's website. Thank you so much to our individual donors. So if you're watching and you've made donations to Project Sleep, we really, really appreciate your support. And also to our corporate partners, ApneaMed, Axum, Lilly, and ResMed. Thank you so much. Our work wouldn't be possible without your support. The biggest thing you can do is sign up for e-updates. So if you go to the Sleep Apnea Squad page on Project Sleep's website, there is an e-update sign up at the top, and that will give you all the information you need to know about everything we're doing. So I've just completed my second Coffee with Emma sleep apnea support call. So we're doing these group Zoom calls once a month. So again, if you're signed up for e-updates, you'll get all the information to your email. So thank you very much, everybody.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.